Okay. I've got it together. So, does anybody have anything that they wish to speak about this evening?
Well, yeah, I just want to quickly thing. Just want to express my appreciation to Pat for recent, I don't know, you said some things recently about the Emprise. I don't know if you knew that or not, but you had mentioned Emprise a couple of times, and I just, you know, there's so much of this that I forget. I guess there's a lot of information, but there are certain things that are key to, I guess, activating things in our life or making things go, and that's one of them that I'd forgotten about. So it's been nice to have that back in mind and in play again, and it made a big difference for me the last week or so I really appreciate it. Did you mention that?
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that I think it's helpful anyway that we all share anything that's working for us when and as it's working for us, just because you never know, it might be the thing that somebody else, you know, needs as well or could use as well as a refocus or something.
Well, I got something for you, Andrew.
Not.
And that is, I'm asking you, directing it towards you, because you seem to have the closest thing to eidetic memory of the crowd here. And
a what memory?
Piece together some of my recollections about when Roger was suggesting that when we're dealing with someone, to say new, and that we don't know what their
declared self is.
Yeah, declared self is. And in one case he said that it would lend them our own, mm-hmm. and then go from there. But what triggered it is that I've been really noticing of late the really weird and wonderful variations of belief structures that people I deal with, either as friends or business people or whatever, some of the weird and wonderful belief structures that they are living. And I'm afraid that more often than not, I end up judging about how the hell they ever got such a weird idea. And then I stopped myself and said, okay, maybe you should be looking as closely as you can to see if you can perceive their declared self. Because it's, I don't think it's going to be, there will ever be an end of me perceiving somebody else's really unique belief system. But I need some help and guidance on how to start looking past that into what their declared self may be. Can you help out, Andrew?
Yeah, I have a gut feeling Misty's going to be more help on this one than I am. if she has not the similar gut feeling, I'm happy to give a go at it.
Well, go ahead, give your go, and I'll add to it.
Well, from what you're saying, there's two things that come to mind. One is, as a basic thing, as I recall, the discussion from a gathering that I came into, right at from the beginning, there was a bunch of healers around, and Roger was tasking you guys, Simone, is this correct, with you should know a person's declared self before they take a step in, you know, as a first step in your office or something like that? Otherwise, you don't know how to deal with them. I think it had something to do with exactly what you said, lending them your declared self. Just right off the bat, because an infinite declared self in relation to another infinite declared self should work. You can just lend them yours, because theirs is infinite, yours is infinite. And then what you start to see, I think, is from those eyes, if you will, from that mindset, you start to see the particular ways in which they've decided to. Now, I mean, the very specific would be, is like as an illustration, if I recall correctly, at one time we talked about your way as being judging all things in goodness, So to me, as you were talking, if I could imagine lending another person judging all things in goodness, then immediately, I guess what would become aware to me, or obvious to me, is the different ways they've chosen to express what they feel or see as desirable goodness in life for them. And then you could start to understand maybe a more specific expression of what their declared self is. Does that make sense?
That just flashed into my awareness. Of course, all those things I described as weird and wonderful ways in which they've belief structures that they have, of course that those would point to what they value and what they, you know, the goodness that they're trying to accomplish.
Well, you know, it's just, of all judging all in goodness, they just find that one particularly desirable, and if those expressions are, well, and you know, you don't even know if those are particularly desirable. It can often be, it's the closest thing they have to expressing whatever they think it is. But at least you start getting traction, you know, it gives you texture and gives you questions you can explore.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of it, I think it may end up that the way you would identify what their declared self is can be quite different in the way you would word it. But in essence, it probably won't be too far off. Maybe that's what I think. Maybe Misty can enlighten us better here.
Okay, well, most of when we talk...
Even correct what I said, Misty. I'm more than happy to, you know, learn more about, or whatever you want to call it, re-clarify what it was that was said.
Well, you pretty well nailed it as far as what he said, but most of that was said before we got into stem cells and stem cells and all that kind of stuff. And as you were talking, I was sitting here thinking, you know, you could create a stem declared self of sorts that you lend out to people, whatever that basic one would be, and then modify that according to how they react and behave to things. You pretty well and pretty quickly can get a good idea of their declared self. Now, that's just something that I just came up with, so it's not anything that Roger ever said.
No, that I can, in my inquiries of myself and in asking the question, I had completely sidestepped any notion of the impact of the stem cell that the loner body stem cell that would be really visible.
Yeah, because there's so much that you can read just looking at a person.
Mm-hmm.
How they are out picturing, how they walk, how they carry themselves, how they shake your hand, how they hug you, whatever they do, all these things help you understand what their declared self is.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you guys used to watch, do go coffee and watch people walking and stuff.
Yeah, Connie and I used to do that, and it was quite enlightening to ourselves. I mean, we didn't share it with the individuals, but to sit there and figure out so much about these individuals just by the way they walked past us when we were sitting there. So I don't know if that helps you at all, Pat, but I think that...
Well, that's very helpful. It is.
It's just another layer that... of understanding that you can add to it. Now, I don't disagree that you can lend your declared self, but I think that perhaps we may be able to take it even beyond that.
Mm-hmm. There's one other thing I was going to mention as well, and that's with our new person in the group. I saw a difficulty she was having with having her pretty solid belief systems being undermined by what we talk about in Forever Living. And she was a little bit cross. And it was specifically about karma And there's a bigger story to be told about that. But I suspect that over the weeks and months that we've been together, that a lot of the key things that she's underwritten as the structure and fabric of her belief system is getting chewed away at when she hears more and more about forever living. And I was really pleased that she's decided to hang in, but she was clearly expressing being upset that these things that she was relying on being solid aren't so solid after all.
And what kind of support did you offer her?
Well, we really build a strong sense of community and support. We stay in close contact. When I remember, and actually Terry does a pretty good job of it too, we remind people that we're not asking them to dump what they believe in. Just set it aside for a moment and listen enough and inquire enough to see if they can understand what we're talking about. And when they go home, they can pick up their beliefs and carry them with them if they want that. And so I think that we remind people that we're not trying to take stuff away from them. And then we strongly work at building a forever living community as a support system.
The one trick that
Okay. I was just going to say, one thing that always worked, you're saying you're not taking anything from anyone. I think a nice, colorful addition to that was the realization that, you know, we're doing is we're offering people a way to add something to what they are, their expressions or their ways of doing things. It gives them more expansive awareness of themselves and life and others.
The other
they can keep the old stuff. Yeah.
The other technique that I use sometimes with people that are in that kind of situation is, if you could live life this way or this way, one according to karma, mm-hmm. let's say, and one without karma, without something coming up and sneaking up on you and slapping you in the back, which would you choose? So that they can start saying, well, geez, if I had a choice, I'd rather have not something coming to get me that could come up at any time and surprise me. I'd rather have a life that I knew that I was living as I truly desired, and that there wasn't anything out there that would come get me, that I was creating constituents, and that was my emergent. So sometimes I use,
that. We do stress, or I do stress over and over again about the freedom that to live as you truly desire, and that nothing dictates how we choose. It's our own choice all the time. Wow, I'm glad I raised
I think now. Just one last thing on that, as I was thinking that applies to both, is sometimes I think that when something bothers people, it's like, you know, Spider-Man has a spider sense. It tingles anytime something's going on. Sometimes I think that, like, people, when something really bothers us, like whether you find yourself judging somebody's beliefs or whether somebody's struggling with an idea like karma, I often think that somewhere in that, there's something that's really important to that person. Meaning, like, you know, we can figure this out. They're really going to like where we end up. It's like something that's part of an important part of their expression that they're struggling to figure out. But once they do get it, it's going to be an issue that they really delight with.
Well, in this case, this gal's husband is quite thoroughly into it now.
Into this and what?
The Buddhist approach to life.
Oh, interesting.
And I suspect a lot of her motivation is that she wants to do it with her husband. It's something that they do together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was as much as anything, that if what I was suggesting was true, then this thing that she's trying to do with her husband isn't as useful as she thought it might be. Because if she has doubts of the value of that belief system, she'll have trouble sharing it with her husband.
Mm. Well, she's obviously there because that belief system doesn't offer her what she's looking for.
I think that's part of it, too. She's doing it so that she can be doing it with her husband rather than something she would do on her own.
And don't forget, any person who's in your life is ready for whatever you have to offer.
Oh, I think so. I think so. And she, we've been going over Wondrous Ways with her.
Yep.
Well, with the group. And it's a nice refresher for everybody. And she looks at it and says, this stuff is fabulous. Why haven't I come across it before? This is fabulous.
Mm. Well, now you can get it out there to them.
Yep, got to get it out there. So thanks, guys. Really appreciate that.
Okay.
Have we got new people coming in, or is there people coming and going?
I don't know.
I heard it ding a couple times. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm a new people in, but I am coming and going. It's percent.
It is percent.
Good to hear you.
Yeah. Well, I'm in part of the time and going when I'm outside taking care of horses and stuff. So I'm kind of coming and going.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know.
Okay, does anybody else have something they wish to discuss? Okay, I will take that as a no. Okay, so we're on to Chronicle K, beginning story. So I guess we'll pick it up with passage one. Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Passage one, beginning story. Are you wondering what all of this is about? Do you really believe you can understand or make sense of yourself and life without thoroughly and deeply delving into and questioning what life and the universe are all about? Or without digging into what you in particular or yourself and life are all about? Don't be silly. We wouldn't even consider delving into such things without getting intimately involved. So we'll begin with some very important questions for you to consider.
Ready for number
Obviously,
two?
Obviously, I got that one not by accident.
Going to answer any of those questions, or shall I read number two?
Read my vote.
Read.
Okay.
Number two. Who are you? How did you come about? What is your life all about? What happens when you die? Whatever that says.
Yep, I fixed it.
Where will you go? Will you continue living? Will you come back later for a visit? What is the meaning and purpose of all this? Is life a mystery or an important adventure? Is life a learning and growing experience or a test of endurance? Actually, do you consider yourself and life to be an illusion or myth, or just a frequently repeated legend? What do you suppose yourself and life is really all about? Answering these questions and many more is what this book is all about.
Okay, so I don't think that we're going to delve into each one of those questions, because we'd be here for a year.
Yeah.
Well, I think that they're, that's a lead in to what's coming, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
That we don't need to answer them.
True.
Okay, passage 3. Each thing we talk about is a chronicle of yourself and life, and of the universe. And, of course, a chronicle is an historical account of facts, data, information, and events that serves as a descriptionary of you and your life in particular. Patrick?
The obvious question to me is that the descriptionary, is that meant to be as the health descriptionary? Or
no,
is
see, that one's the health descriptionary. This is a different descriptionary.
This is a generic
of you and your life.
Yeah, a descriptionary of you.
Yeah.
Okay. So number 4. The descriptionary begins describing the conflicts between you as a self and you as an embodied being, which is revealed in the pains, problems, and afflictions of your body. You trained your body to mind in language ways and live by memories. And by living your body, you have become addicted to those old undesirable ways.
Okay, I think I'll add an S there.
5. What?
Now, so just to clarify again, that when it starts off, the descriptionary, that means this book, these chronicles, right?
Descriptionary of your life.
This whole book, no, it's not talking about this whole book. No, it's talking about your personal descriptionary, understanding all the different things about your body, about your life.
Okay, because it's not talking about. I just wanted to make sure. I think it's not talking about the WISBOD dictionary.
Right. It is not. But it is talking about it in the sense that it's talking about your body and how you're out picturing. Because that's how you understand a lot about yourself. Anytime you have an illness or an injury or anything else, the descriptionary is the tool with which you create your own personal descriptionary telling you about yourself.
No, I understand that. But I thought that should be a lowercase d because of the way it was talked about in 3.
Yeah, actually, I have it circled. So, yes.
Okay. Okay, because I was looking at what this was saying as meaning what we're reading right now, not any other book. And so it was starting off as the conflict and the story and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
5. You are today living and struggling against the beginning and ending story that was told to you years ago. This story had been circulating for centuries and centuries and repeated again and again for hundreds of generations without your ever seriously being questioned as to whether this story chronicled real events. Is it possible that the beginning, ending story you believe and have built your life on is just a myth?
Dum, da, dum, dum.
It is.
Oh, you spilled the beans.
Well, if it's only one bean, that's pretty easy to pick up.
Okay. Simone?
Shall I do number 6?
Yes, please.
A myth is an untrue story, and a legend is a story that has been passed along for generation to generation without regard to whether or not it is true. Of course, it may have been true in the beginning, and it changed
and then changed over times as it was passed along, such that the original truth can hardly be found in the story today. And if this portrays yourself in life, the truth of you can hardly be found today.
All right. Anyone discussion on that? I like the setup.
It's obvious.
Wow, it looks to me that.
I just thought we do a game in school sometimes. The starter person says a word in the ear of the next person beside her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear the word at the end of the round. It may be completely different than what the starting person said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call that grapevine.
Oh, we called it telephone.
Game.
We called it telephone.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, good. Me too. We too, yeah.
I like the idea from this 6 that the truth of you can hardly be found today. That just might, you know, make sense of some of our experience or our lack of experience. Okay, shall I read 7 or are we going to another more on this?
I think we're good.
Okay, 7. Your beginning story is the insipid of yourself and life today, and of everything that occurs in your world. Okay, so Pat, thinking about those, what you call them, wondrous beliefs that other people have?
Yep.
I don't know. There's a tool that I can think about, you know. What must be? What must a belief like that, what kind of beginning story must be from a formal belief like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that it's not a matter of that if you've got the right beginning stories, you've got an insipid. If everybody will have an insipid of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Whether it's the one they want, it's a different issue.
The point is, I think I've run across where they don't even begin to appreciate that there is a want or not want involved. That's the way it is.
Hmm.
Somebody fell off their chair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Karen, will you take us on to the next?
Yeah, did you finish that one, Andrew?
Yeah, it was short. You want me to say it again?
It was 8, right?
No, 7. Number 7.
Oh, you did 7. Oh, okay, that's what.
Is the insipid of yourself and life today and everything that occurs in your world.
8. Your beginning ending story, like a myth or a legend, has been repeated over and over for a long time. In every belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action. And in every desire and experience, without any regard as to whether or not your story is true. Or whether you want that self in life, or even what to believe in the story you believe. Isn't that a bit foolish? Especially considering that the story myth legend of your beginning and ending permeates and controls every aspect of yourself and life, and everything that happens to you.
Yeah, that's pretty profound.
Yeah, I want to ask a question at this point, because that's talking more about the, I guess you could see the relevance or the importance in life, our lives of these things. When it talks about beginning story, I was wondering, does this mean the one that, like, we consciously, you know, have learned and maintain, like Pat said, whether we want to or not, whether we like it or not? Because I think part of it's that. I think that that definitely, you know, has effect on your conscious or your loner expressions. But I was wondering, well, since we did those Superman stories years ago, Well, there was a beginning story that I never really had or knew before, you know, we wrote them out. But are those in play? Or since we haven't given those expression, are those not in play?
Well, for you, they are in play. But for the masses, which is to whom he's writing, their beginning and ending story is relative to what they've been taught. For Christians, you know, Adam and Eve, and then when you die, you go to heaven and all that kind of stuff. And for Buddhists, their story, and for Hindus, their story, and so on and so forth, that everybody has been, in one regard or another, taught a beginning and ending story.
Right.
And that's the story of which he's speaking.
Okay. Well, because what I was asking more is, I give expression to one and I tend to follow it consciously in languaging and in loner mind. But I was just wondering if that one that I had never expressed before 2008, you know, was also active in my life before I ever expressed it.
My sense, Andrew, is that the fact that we could write it down, that we could bring it alive and write it down, says that it was there, and I suspect that whatever beginning story we believe, we will in one way or another experience a conflict between that story that we've never been able to express and what we are living.
That's what I tend to think, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, like, when I sat down to write that story, it just wrote itself. It just flowed. It was just like, there was no hesitation. It just was like automatic writing. It was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. But what happens is we allow the other one to overwrite it to a large extent,
yeah,
because it's what everybody else believes. And so this one that is our true story gets pushed to the rear, and in order to be part of society and to be able to live and work in the world generally, we think that we must follow these stories that have been presented to us and not our own. And I think you're right. We end up, Patrick, that we end up in a conflict over that. And I think that's a big part of what people come up against.
Mm-hmm.
What you just said, Missy, I mean, almost word for word, that could be a description of the descriptionary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people live beliefs that are in conflict with the ones they truly desire. I think it's interesting, you know, to look back on that story now. I would wonder if it's not so much in the specifics of the specifics that I wrote or anybody writes for their beginning story. I'll say it's 100% accurate, but not complete, meaning I think maybe there's something it is expressing, something underneath that it's expressing that is, you could write it at a different point in your life when you don't have all the forever living words, and it might still be.
Oh, I think that's true. Yeah, I think that there's a whole lot more to that story, even though we have the forever living words that we have not yet been able to bring forth and express.
All right, I agree with that too.
We keep on trying to language it.
Yeah, and it's the languaging part that gets us a lot of times into a problem, because we're trying to really tell it as a story and not really more so as a description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we bollocks it up.
Yeah, I don't want to go off subject, but you know, I just real quick, I saw a movie the other day called The Arrival, which is, you know what that is?
No, you do go off.
Yeah, I know, I know. But listen, but just hang on a second. I'm saying, Pat started talking tonight. I just think this is part of it. I think Pat started talking tonight about the funny belief systems people have. And this 7 and 8 talked to me a bit about the beginning story that dominates our life. And I think goes a long way in explaining in terms of the conflicts that people have, the joys people have, and things like that. And I guess all I'm saying is, in the movie, these aliens teach this lady a different language, and just learning their language, she begins to perceive things in a very different way. It's like something inside the language is triggering a different part of her brain. I just think the beginning-ending story here is really important for all of us.
Yes.
It's not so much the specifics of the story as what it does to you to have it in action in your life. I don't know if everybody thinks about that. I guess I've been thinking about it a lot recently with the Incipit thing. I mean, the M-Prize.
Yeah.
So sorry for going off subject. Just.
Now, I don't think it's possible to go off subject. It's all related.
Yeah, I don't think that you've gone afield far enough that I would say, boy, you've really gone off in a tangent. We're fine.
So I guess I'm just saying I think what comes on these pages is really important. I hope that we, you know.
Well, I think that it's no accident that these things trigger certain thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so when those thoughts are triggered, sometimes it behooves us to go off and explore and find out, why is that triggering that thought, emotion, or whatever? And by doing that, I think that all of us can explore more and glean more out of the whole situation.
Thank you.
Okay. So I believe we're on passage 9.
9 is right.
You are denying and destroying yourself and life today in some perverted effort to prove your beginning-ending story, so you can carry it on. And the most foolish thing of all is that you don't even believe or want to believe the story you say you believe, such that yourself and life today is not the adventure you hoped for.
Ain't that a truth?
And that's because we allow the other stories to overwrite our own story.
They well, that just says to me that we allow that story to overwrite our true self, overwrite our sense of ourself as eternal or as we truly desire.
Well, any story that's not as you truly desire and is not your true self becomes a problem.
Right.
So the problem is whether you believe the story you're telling yourself or not. And the conflicts that come out of that, the struggles that come out of that,
mm-hmm.
the outpicturings that come out of that, the destroyed lives that come out of that, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many people at the end of their life goes, wow, that was a really cool adventure. Boy, I really enjoyed that. That was exactly how I planned on living my life. I don't think we run across very many of those.
Right. I mean, these first passages in this page, Roger used to kind of hound me like about writing a book for my readings, you know. When are you going to write your book for the readings, your pamphlet, or whatever this is about? I was just thinking, like, this would really fit well as introducing what getting into past lives and stuff is all about.
That's true.
Well, this conversation is reminding me of, I think it was Janet Leigh, a blues singer from the 50s and 60s that had that song about, is that all there is to the fire?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a depressing old-time blues where it's just like, I don't know how blues performers ever maintain their sanity.
I agree.
I wonder about that all the time, you know. Of course, most of them don't. When you really think about
it. Right. Okay, number 10?
Number 10.
Despite all of this, what you are living and doing in your life today is not a myth or bad dream. It is quite an extraordinary undertaking. But what you believe and think about yourself in life, and what you say and do is quite a different story you never heard before or realized. And that story is quite a myth and a legend of a different king.
Kind.
Kind? Okay, kind. And is entirely true. I think I need to go over that one again.
Please do, that was a good one.
Despite all of this, what you are living and doing in your life today is not a myth or bad dream. It is quite an extraordinary undertaking. But what you believe and think about yourself in life, and what you say and do, is quite a different story you never heard before or realized. And that story is quite a myth and a legend of a different kind and is entirely true. So there's a shift in the middle here. It's quite an extraordinary undertaking. But what you believe and think about yourself in life and what you say and do is quite a different story you never heard of before or realized. Okay, there. I needed to find that break in the middle.
Okay.
So if he described right at the beginning that story, that myth isn't true, and a legend isn't true, I wonder why he's put it together again here and said it's a myth and a legend that is entirely true. I guess we might have to move on, read on.
Okay.
11. If your beginning, ending story is based on the world around you, how can you be certain that what you heard about that world and what you believe is true is actually true? Did the world exist as a wondrous place in the sky, as a divine or mystical home of the gods? And was that exchange place shaken loose, such that it fell from the sky and became the earth and world around you? And were you and other humans created or born or resurrected from the bodies of animals that were buried when the earth fell from the sky? If you don't believe this story, why would you believe that one day a god created heaven and earth and created you from the dust of that earth? And why ever would you indenture yourself to that god?
God, I love that.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Kind of puts it in its place, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, we have a First Nation called Cowichan First Nation in our neighborhood here. It's actually the biggest in all of the province of BC. And their legend has that rocks fell from the heavens. And there's lots of rocks around on the ground, and they said that's the original people and the remnants of the original people that fell from the heavens.
But I imagine that if you really scratch the surface on most of those people that are saying that you'd find that they don't really believe that.
Well, actually, they just want to mystify the white man.
So, Misty, just word check. In the middle there of the passage, it says where the line on the left starts, mystical home of the gods, ? And was that exchanged place? Is that enchanted or exchanged?
Well, good question.
It could be either, really.
It almost doesn't make any difference, but I just, in the line above, did the world exist as a wondrous place in the sky, a divine or mystical, you know, those kind of words. And then it went to exchange, which seems a little out of place. But chanted, I thought, might
I think you're probably
look
right.
Similar in writing.
Yeah, because it's just the
okay.
G that's different. I think I'll change that out. Thank you.
Well,
into what?
Enchanted.
Enchanted.
And the X with the N.
The G.
Yeah, E-N-C-H-A-N-T-E-D. Mm-hmm. Enchanted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just a question.
Number 12?
Yep.
Yep.
That's the baby.
Indenture, by the way, means you bound yourself and life to work for that God for a given period of time. Just what is a period of your indenture? Do you know? And did you read the agreement?
Or didn't you read the agreement?
Actually, never did. No.
Okay.
Okay. 13. If your beginning ending is true, and based on the world around you, how do you know the story that a God created you and all things, or any other beginning ending story is true? After all, a truth must always and always be true. It cannot include any exceptions or limiting conditions. Or if your beginning ending story is based on some world within you, how do you know the truth of that story? And how did you come about in order for an inner outer to come about? Oh, an inner outer you to come about.
Inner outer you, yeah.
The basic point there is that whatever the beginning story is, by what means can you establish that it's true?
That's right.
What'd you say the answer was, Pat? Because that's just the way it is? Is that what they say?
I don't know that he heard you, Andrew.
It's all right. It doesn't matter.
Ask again.
Next.
Andrew had a question for you.
Oh, no, no, no. Go ahead, Karen, next one. 14.
Okay. Number 14. What is your beginning ending story? Do not repeat my description about how the universe began. Describe how you began. Did you begin before or after the universe began? If you don't remember what happened, make up a story, or tell us your best guess, or finest Bible story.
It's the old make it up and make it real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Passage 15. Whatever you decide, be brief. Spend no more than 10 minutes, so there's no time for details or flowery or vague languaging, and get right to the point and the facts of outlining your beginning ending story. That's what that space is for.
Oh, that's what the space is for.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I guess
I remember.
If you guys don't know
like
that, then I guess I should say
story.
Write your story below. Okay. Now we've given them instructions.
Are we gonna review? Does anybody want to review their original beginning story? Or
I don't remember it.
What? How are you operating?
I always go with the first reading I had. Yeah. And I remember that I had much difficulties in expressing myself in that story.
Well, maybe what we should do next week is each of us either find our story or write a story and go over them. What do you guys think?
Sure. I think mine, I was just realizing that mine really relates to today. It's a dream.
Well, you should share it if it's 10 minutes or less.
Well, let's do that as a group next week, okay?
Okay.
And you may want to go through and edit it a little bit or whatever else, making sure that it's more a description than a flowery type thing.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's what I remember too, that we were too, we used too many adjectives.
Yep.
By the time we did the first exercise.
Yep.
Some of the stories came out very long. Yeah.
Well, the thing I guess I would, and I remember Roger raked them over several times about what does this mean, what does that mean. But I think, regardless of how you expressed it, I think there's something to it. And no matter what we might have questioned about how we language it, I still think there's probably something to it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't disagree with that. No.
Absolutely not. Number 16. Did you start with some vision of long ago and far, far away, or did you start with today at this moment? If you are data information mind, what is data information mind continues? It is data, information, memories, memories. You are mind, minding memory, and memory. Ain't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Well, that's a neat point, Missy, here. Or did you start with today at this moment? Maybe it's an idea that when we review our beginning stories next week, we tailor them today at this moment.
Yeah, that might be interesting.
Well, would that Pat, just what would that look like? I know we start the stories normally with long ago and far away, so what would it look like to make it a now thing?
That it would be today at this moment, I am or I live.
Mm-hmm.
In my beginning story, I came alive with an extraordinary access to memory and memories.
Mm-hmm.
And today it's a much more clear fulfillment of that for me. And so today I function. Today, at this moment, I function with extraordinary access to memory and memories. And I love that last line. You are mind, minding memory and memories. In a nutshell, that's what we are.
Are we ready?
Yep.
17. Sometime in the past, if you look carefully and awarefully, you will see that once upon announced time.
Nonce time, yeah.
A lot, huh?
Nonce time.
Nonce time. A long, long time ago, you existed only as a condition, a state we can refer to today as a condition of godness. Because as a condition, you were all-knowing and fully aware. You were everywhere, present and timeless. You were unrestricted, creative power and insight. You had unlimited authority and influence in the infinite condition. And you were all powerful, your own realm. But one important thing you did not have was an identity. You were not particularly and individually anything. You were unknown and unknowable. You had nothing to be or express, nothing you could declare to be. You could not be experienced or realized. Actually, you had everything. You were everywhere.
No.
Yet, you had no way of realizing yourself or clearly expressing yourself from this state of allness. You existed, but you were not alive as any specific thing.
Absolutely powerful ones.
Yeah.
You know, it really plays on those beliefs or those words that people have such an emotional value for. And then dumps them over.
Leighton?
Yeah.
Number 18. Much as a star coalesces from clouds of gas-like energy, and planets coalesce from clouds of matter, you coalesced as a concept from clouds of data information, and you remain as a concept even today. No. This is the part I always liked when we described the let's say, the becoming of the universe, how particles coalesced to something else, finally to us and to the world around us.
Okay, Andrew.
Okay. 19, right?
Yes.
Yep.
As energy existed but came alive as stars, and matter existed but came alive as planets, you existed but came alive as a concept. But what concept, and what concept were you?
But
what
is a
concept, and what concept were you? All right.
Anybody want to answer what a concept is?
Just a particular thing in mind, I think. It's a, I don't know how you describe what a concept is. The pattern of mind?
Yeah, that would work. Something that you think up or conceive or whatever. Okay, Karen, do it to us.
Number 20, a concept of you is something conceived of. Mind, a general or abstract idea or image. A thought that includes all that is characteristically associated as you. In this, you were something, yet nothing. You were a concept of self without any realization or expression of selfness.
We were all just thoughts.
Yeah.
21. A star has its realized essence and shines brightly. And planets have their realized essence and serve as a foundation or place in space and time. but who or what concept were you? Who or what were you to be? What would realize and individualize you? And how would that occur?
When I read these things, I realize how carefully Roger put things together, that each one of them is a foundation on which we could stand to take it to the next place.
Yep. As I've said
number
before,
22.
There were times when he would sit there all day on one sentence. So he put a lot of thought into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember him talking about he wanted to make sure there was no rabbit holes or rat holes that you could escape through and miss the point. Number 22. At this time, when there was just one of you as a universal condition, you were always in harmony with the universe and the world around you. You were not superior or greater, and though you had a vague sense of yourself, you were not formed. You were not a formed individual, nor did you have real identity. In this, your existence was indistinguishable and somewhat empty. For though you existed, you were not actually alive. However, emerging from being a sense of yourself as a concept was a personal self. A personal self or personal image. But what is emergent and what causes this?
Hmm. 23. All things in the universe are emergent. Nothing is caused. Emergent indicates properties that exist in the whole but do not exist in the constituent parts. As an illustration of this, if you communion two constituents of hydrogen and one constituent of oxygen, blah, blah, though this water emergently appears, no chant or prayer or faith is necessary cause water. It's emergent. It is apparent that you do not cause water, because obviously whatever causes can certainly withhold causing. But following this pattern, water always is emergent, and you cannot withhold water, nor can you cause or withhold the properties of water, such as wetness, flowability, cohesion, surface tension, refraction, and reflection, which are emergent with water as well. But what has all of this to do with you? Well, let's see.
In this beginning, though you existed as a condition of godness, or as a concept of yourself or God in mind, and though you were present everywhere in the universe, you could not be known or found anywhere. As energy becomes stars and matter becomes something, you wanted to be something too. Being a concept or condition of God, though you were everything in mind, that was neither acceptable nor enough for you. You wanted to be something, almost anything, rather than being everything in mind. From this, it seems you began life being discontented.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Mm-hmm. You started this life being discontent. I recall, like, early, well, actually, I was listening back to some 08 discussions we had on this stuff. I thought that, well, we did discuss about there was no discontent in this state. It was contentment. So I'm just curious why this has developed or evolved into a discontent.
Yeah, this is, I've often puzzled myself in describing this phase of the transition of transfiguring, that in mind, being everything but no particular thing, was there enough of a particularity to want something? He's suggesting that it was.
Interesting question.
Yeah, well, this seems to say so, yeah. It seems to say that there was enough that of a particularization that you could be discontent.
Right. I don't question it at all. I mean, what this passage is, you know, fairly self-explanatory in and of itself. But I just remembered this discussion, Misty, that you and Roger shared with us, that y'all had or were having about you could be curious about the world outside your bubble, but not discontent. And the curiosity would, you know, be a reason to come to life or something like that.
Well, maybe it is that
I'm not trying to contradict anything you wrote. I'm not trying to contradict anything you wrote here. It was a curiosity to me how it evolved.
But perhaps it's saying that once you particularized, then the discontent was there. Maybe not when it's inside the bubble.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Well, to me, there's still a puzzle because it began life being discontent.
Mm-hmm.
That prior to beginning life was no discontent.
Yeah, that was in existence.
And I wish I could ask him. To me, I don't understand the rationale for experiencing discontent after having come alive in a particular way.
Maybe you can ask him.
Yeah, it seems.
I mean, you guys keep saying that I can't ask him. Well, maybe you can.
That's a good point.
Well, Andrew, why don't we both ask him and see if we can get an answer by next week?
No, I'm kind of afraid to open that door right now. I may not want to do that. I don't know how long the discussion would become.
I don't think that it would be all that long, because last time when we did it, it kind of got to the point where it was becoming too much of an effort for him to hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
But you may be able to.
But it also says it seems you began life being discontent.
That's a great point.
So
little words.
Maybe it's just a perception based off our other belief system,
mm-hmm.
that it seems like. But
or in looking back, it seems
maybe,
like, yeah.
Yeah, or we may find out that it's not discontent. It might be curiosity, or I do something else now, or I make something up and make it real, and whatever. I think there are variations besides discontent.
My personal sense of this is I suspect. Well, anyway, to me it seems like, yeah, it would make sense that we started off not discontent and as a condition, but every incarnation, if you want to call it, or every episode, or whatever you want to call it, in eternity, depending on if you want to continue or not, could bring more awareness, more personification, more individuality to that. Could bring more, you know, that back into the whatever this is, mind? I don't know what you call it.
Well, there's one pattern that
Unparticularized mind.
The concepts. Yeah. Self.
Well, then, like all, go back to 23. All things in the universe are emergent. Nothing is caused.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't say some things. That nothing is caused. And that in here, it almost implies that the discontent somehow was involved in coming alive.
Mm-hmm.
And is discontent a constituent and emergent was coming alive? I don't know. But, I've always assumed that as it all, everything is emergent, it coalesced and eventually coalesced to the point what was emergent was a concept, and as that coalesced, something else was emergent. I don't know why it was important to drop in here to discontent.
Mm-hmm.
It's all emergent. I just don't understand that.
Well, maybe as we read on, we'll get a glimpse of
what
it might be.
Okay.
I just want to share one thing that was, to me anyway, clarified in these last couple passages. The condition of godness, which, I dug up a couple months ago to talk about, is that whatever you're doing, whatever you are, you know, you're more than that, you're bigger than that, you're beyond that kind of thing. That it's actually a beginning thing, not necessarily. I'm not saying he won't say in the end, but it's not like we're evolving to a condition of godness.
No, we started.
You started there. That's a given.
We are. Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes I get confused as to where to map these things, but at least now I think in my own mind I can say, okay, that one's in the beginning. That was before individuality and stuff.
Yeah, and my sense is that we never leave it behind either.
Nope, exactly. That's exactly.
Yeah, you're right, Misty. Let's move ahead. Maybe we get greater clues.
Whose turn is it? I've lost track.
Okay, so it's 25.
And whose turn?
Yeah.
25.
All right. 24.
You did.
Yeah, you did, Simone.
So it's mine, 25.
Oh, okay.
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 So 25, you wanted to be like the stars, to shine brightly as the stars. But what could you do? How could you be like a star and shine resplendently as a star? Stars were formed naturally through accretion and coalescence by drawing formed and unformed energy together and uniting that into a single body from which resplendent shining was emergent. What could you communion together emergently shine? You only had to had yourself as a concept in mind, as the source for everything. Could you possibly particularize and personalize that concept into a self-image? Okay, I don't have a lot of questions on that one for anybody.
Good for number 26.
Okay.
Yep.
In minding outside of yourself, visions just opened in mind. Visions that were yours, but they weren't you, because they were different and other than your concept. Do I say the next bit in a squeaky little voice? Or? Do you see? Insist that by knowing all things only relative to yourself, by maintaining your self-focus and not setting yourself and beliefs aside, by searching to discover yourself and unfold yourself, in looking within and even by struggling to know thyself, I guess that's a typo, At that moment, you seriously limit and restrict yourself in life?
Okay. Anybody got anything to say about that?
Just that that part makes sense to me, that visions could just appear, start appearing.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what minding is all about.
Yep.
Okay, 27. The visions that appeared were images you had never experienced before. Could you personalize and intimately communion those visions with your concept and have an emergent self-image appear and communion your self-concept self-image to an emergent personal self? And so it was emergent. But even this was not enough. You wanted even more.
So, is it possible we're talking about the urge to expand creation?
Oh, yeah.
Could the urge be an inspiration, an excitement, instead of just a discontent?
Yeah. Yeah, I really am not comfortable at all with that discontent part, that urge to expand creation. And if that makes more sense than one.
Or, just for the sake of argument, is it possible that any inspiration or discontent, I mean, any inspiration is a discontent, any urge is a form of discontent unless or until it's fulfilled?
I think that that's probably true, that is a driving force, a factor. I mean, if you're totally, totally content, you're not going to do anything.
Okay.
So if you go back to that discontent thing, then that may be the driving factor.
Mm-hmm.
That it was a necessary constituent in order to be.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sit with you, Patrick?
I'm tossing that around. I can see it as a motivator, that's for sure. But I don't know why experiencing the absence of discontent. Remember, he didn't say you're out there being content. He said if you could experience the absence of discontent. That doesn't mean that you just go into a nothing space and do nothing. That from a place of absence of discontent, there are no limitations whatsoever.
Well, maybe we took, I just suggesting that maybe we took discontent as kind of a negative. And just as food for thought here, since I also, and I definitely, I'm the first one who mentioned it, but just as a what if, it reminds me of this, that's what I'm getting here. I'm sorry, it reminds me of that article, I don't know if you guys remember, was it 99 or something, Love and Anger? Do y'all remember that one where you substitute the words?
Yep.
Yes.
And he goes through and he describes anger and all this kind of stuff, which essentially there's a passage in there which I cannot recall, but I think it was something similar to this, which is like anger discontents you or whatever. And you think like, yeah, that's true. Those aren't the words, but something like that. And then when you substitute love, it says love discontents you. And you think, what? Because we think that's a good thing. So I'm just wondering if there is a commonality or a commonness in these two seemingly different things, inspiration and discontent, or even curiosity and discontent.
Well, I
yeah, it says it seems.
I gotcha.
It does not say it is discontent, or
Right.
Yeah, it seems.
Some wiggle room on this.
And when I go further, then it might be so that we find it's maybe something else than discontent. Maybe it's not discontent or not content or. Yeah.
Sharon, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I'm still puzzling around that my notions of what the absence of discontent was about. I took it to mean that he did say that the sensation and feeling of the absence of discontent trumped any of the standard of emotions of happiness, joy, or anything else, absolutely trumps it. And it was a highly desirable place to be, the absence of discontent. And if I remember that correctly, I'm having trouble kind of drawing a circle around it being a motivator. His motivator is sort of like a bit of a prod. And I don't associate that with the absence of discontent. So I think I mentioned it last week, that Roger at one point was telling us that when life saw that conditions had stabilized on this planet and they were reliable and safe to come alive, life began embodying. That was emerging.
Was that life created the universe thing?
I can't remember the broader context. I just remember that part. So that,
okay.
Again, is emergent. And that I just can't place this discontent part within the context of emergence. You have to be emergent before you can be discontent before you can be emergent or have emergent occur. I don't know. That's a puzzling question for me still. I'll think about it. I guarantee you I'll think about it for next week.
Well, to be discontent brings us into the realm of the physical being.
That seems to be, yes.
And so to be in a realm of being not discontent gets us into present moment.
Yeah, we're not upset, not angry, we're not scared.
It's the only way to get into present moment is to drop all emotion.
Yeah, you're not seeking happiness, you're not overcoming anger, you're not overcoming fear. You're stepping outside of all the emotions.
That's the only way to be in present. And
that's the only
to truly
way to
begin again.
But one of the reasons I don't like the term present moment is that I think non-time. I think we can experience our life in non-time and live that absence of discontent.
Yeah, I think the old thing was you cannot but be in the present, but you can only know in the past.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice about being in the present. But if you're aware of anything, you're already past awareness by comparison.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, I'm prepared to set this discontent thing aside for the moment, and let's see what
right
else
on.
We have.
Yep.
So whose turn is it?
Well, I had done 25. Did I do 25? Yeah, I think so.
Sharon did 26.
I do 27.
Yeah, that's right. The small voice person.
Yeah.
So Pat does 28.
Yeah.
And that's my turn at 28?
Yep.
Are you truly, as you truly desired to commune your personal self with a body such that a personal being would be emergent? Starts with truly desired. Something strange, almost mystical, happened. You discovered that in preparing the way for you, the universe had prepared a very primitive starter body for you to use and make yours. But of course, that body was not actually yours. It belonged to your body's parents, not to you. In fact, your parents were yours only in that you gained benefits or impairment from them. Physically, they were your body's parents, not yours.
Mm-hmm. 29. Oh, what to do? You as an eternal concept expressing through a self-image as a personal self had a body that was not yours, and parents that were not yours. Whatever would you do? Well, there wasn't much you could do about your parents. They had their own life and images to live, but you certainly could function your starter body to serve you, and that you did.
Mm-hmm. 30. As you functioned your body and made it comfortably yours, and became a personal being, strange visions and stories you had never experienced before emergently appeared in mind. Only years later did you discover that those visions and stories were of your body's ancestors. And by visualizing and listening outside of yourself, you had access to this expansive and extensive awareness. But what was really happening?
Andrew, you got to read on. I'm sitting at the edge of my seat.
All right. No discussion on that one. 31. These visions and stories seemed mysterious or mystical, even metaphysical or sacred. But what was occurring was that with that body, you were given an expansive and extensive gift from the universe called entanglement.
Got it.
Which, like your body, the universe had prepared for you. And though Einstein thought this was rather spooky, it is normal and natural in the universe. But this has had a sorrowful effect on life and beliefs for centuries by being falsely understood. So let's see if we can restore this gift to its proper place in the universe and in your life. I'm not sure what the sorrowful of that is. Does anybody know?
You don't understand what?
The sorrowful. What's the sorrowful of this? The sorrowful effect this spooky theory is, spooky effect has had on the universe. Just that I don't expect anybody would know. I'm just asking if anybody knew, because I don't.
I don't know.
Okay. How about a couple millennia of religion?
Okay, that might be, yeah, God experience or something like that, yeah.
That's pretty sorrowful.
Okay. Thank you.
Got it. At the level of particles, any two or more particles, once intimately entangled or involved,
so as to make separation somewhat difficult, such as particles accreting as
matter,
not the imprint or memory of that accretion remains with each particle. Even if separated across the universe, so that if one particle is later affected in some way, all particles that were once united as matter react as though they are still bound together. In addition, each particle brings an imprint of its previous accretion to every ensuing ensuing entangled relationship, which new particles react to, even though they had no direct memory or imprint to be responding to. That certainly seems strange or unusual, but it doesn't indicate an everywhere present God or a oneness of all things. What it does indicate is that though the imprints and memories for your body's particles, through the imprints and memory for your body's particles, you have access to almost infinite matters in the universe. But that is probably too weak or insignificant for you to realize. However.
That made sense then of my question.
Mm-hmm. However.
Often the previous page map is matter, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. What applies to particles also applies to close friends and family members, but in these relationships, our memories tend to obscure or overcome memory, such that through memories, you withhold these greater awarenesses from yourself.
Oh, okay. Okay, 34. Having visions and stories of your ancestors indicated you had bypassed your interfering memories, which of course you did, because you had no memories of these ancestors or experiences. But to gain these awarenesses at a human scale, you must also have had a direct memory connection across time and space, and that you had through DNA from your body's DNA was connected to your mother's and your father's DNA and the DNA of their parents and their parents and their parents. Following this DNA pattern backwards further and further brought the almost infinite past alive again and made that awareness acceptable to you. Actually, awareness of these individuals and their lives are as full and clear to you as though they were your past lives, which couldn't be because this is your very first body. But your body had an extensive DNA history and a chronicle of ancestors, which indicated your body was eternal and seem to indicate an everlasting, eternal soul living out its karma.
That's one I had.
35.
Hang on a sec, what's on that one?
Yes.
I had not thought that one through to the back and back and back, following this backwards further and further to the almost infinite past life. Past alive. Anyway, that going back to what Cro-Magnon man or whatever the hell, this is suggesting that all of that is acceptable. It does not mean that.
What do you mean? All of this is acceptable.
Yeah. I think you said accessible, not accept. I heard the same thing, though.
What did you say exactly?
Me or Andrew? Me, it says that if we follow the pattern backwards further and further.
Yeah.
Almost infinite past alive again.
Mm-hmm.
And made that awareness accessible to us.
So we can go back to early
ancestors, Cro-Magnon, Mangan, all man. In theory, at least, that is all accessible to us.
Hmm.
And wouldn't that give you, in the process of accessing that and knowing what you're accessing, wouldn't that give an individual the sense of being eternal? Totally done.
Seems to be logical.
Mm-hmm.
35. Though you don't seem to realize it or believe it, your body today reveals its eternal nature and is what you refer to as your eternal soul. Your soul. It should be your. Your soul is real. It is not a spirit. Mm-hmm.
I must have been getting tired when we got to this one. I missed a lot of the edits. Go ahead, Simone.
Oh, I didn't hear you, Misty.
I said, I must have been tired when I got to this particular chronicle because I missed a lot of the edits.
Yeah. Okay. Are we ready for 36?
Yes.
Go.
Actually, in this, just as a self-replicating particle creates particles which create the original particles, through your body's DNA, you were selecting and connecting across time and space with individuals and lives that created your body, and were still active in your body and life. And that wasn't spooky or mysterious, but not being understood, it was demonized and psychometry, or divining facts concerning an object or its owner through direct contact with an object, or by being in close proximity to the object. There are several words I have to look up. Maybe someone else read that paragraph again.
You did all right.
Psychometry.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I think you did fine. What is psychometry?
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
Where you hold an object.
You hold on to an object, and then it releases its data and information to you.
Ah, okay. So entanglement is entanglement. Period.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
people
exactly.
People just like the more direct touch.
Mm-hmm.
You know that old saying, you know, if these walls could talk, well... If you have the ears to hear, they can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you find concerning an object? Oh. Or its owner so dark as an object. Oh, psychometry is kind of like described after, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
An object or its owner through direct contact with an object or by being in close proximity to that object. Yeah.
The You understand the word proximity?
No.
It means being very close to it. Around it. In that general vicinity.
Yes. Yeah. The opposite of distance. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm fine.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Andrew?
J37. Let's see. If you understand these things, then certainly you see how it is possible and natural to sit in close proximity to people and tune in to their bodies' past lives, which is more correctly their ancestors' lives, not theirs. Theirs.
Yep.
But it does sort of reveal a basis for ancestor worship, doesn't it? And it also keeps the past alive and well. And it indicates why you have always felt far greater than the you normally see and experience yourself to be, which is not potential. And why your life seems far more expansive and extensive than your daily affairs. You sensed all of this through your body. And even since that, the person in the mirror looking back at you was not really you. What was going on? You couldn't really explain this.
Yep.
And it disturbed you. It does disturb me when I can't explain tis.
When you can't explain what?
Tis.
Yeah,
what you wrote there? Tis.
Well, you know, my grandmother always used to say tis, tis, tis.
And she did mean this?
No. She meant that's not a good thing to do.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, Karen?
All right, 38. Not recognizing yourself in a new body, you strive endlessly to learn, grow, and develop, to become worthy of being who you already are, so you can unfold and cultivate yourself further and live as you truly desire. Do you understand that every aspect of these actions deceives you and interferes with your being and living as you truly desire? For in not understanding the expansive offerings of the universe, you wanted to be immortal, to exempt from death and oblivion.
To be
the same you eternally. But the universe is not as cruel as that, and does not restrict you to being yourself eternally. The universe gives you life and access, and fully supports you, making no demands upon you, or discontenting you. But you have discontented yourself. You have created fundamental and ultimate concerns about yourself and life. What to do? Oh, what could you do? This was the beginning of your personal discontent in life and the collapse of your living as you truly desire.
Yeah.
I think that gives some greater meaning to me about personal discontent.
Mm-hmm. Definitely does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Passage 39. Do you now realize there is nothing you can do to become content? That your first awareness and choice is to stop discontenting yourself? Actually, that is your only choice. Or in doing otherwise, everything in yourself and life interferes with your being and living as you truly desire. See how grand the universe is? It prepares an unconstrained environment and fully and unconditionally supports you, for nothing can ever interfere with your not discontenting yourself. The decision to discontent or not discontent yourself is completely yours. That's the authority of man.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them.
Huh? Yeah. I just think about how do I discontent myself? How I feel about occurrences?
Okay. Well, how do you discontent yourself about your headmaster?
Say that again.
How do you discontent yourself relative to your headmaster?
Huh. Okay. I think he should do otherwise.
Yes. So it's about how you think and how you feel and all those kinds of things, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's the old saying, it's not the occurrence, it's how I feel about the occurrence. No.
Right.
Stop doing it.
Number 40. If you understand that anything you do to content yourself is actually an attempt to satisfy yourself, and even that will discontent you, then you must realize that everything you do to live as you truly desire will also discontent you and not be as you truly desire. Now, that's hard for me not to do. Mm. I'm always finding myself setting out to live as I truly desire. That to live is the giveaway.
Well, that was early on, I think, how we got started in this stuff as a get starter. But later on, it became, you know, just, you know, choosing how you will be alive, then what you do, how you do it, doesn't matter.
Yep.
It precedes and proceeds everything.
You mean I have trouble with number 40. You do too live as you truly desire. Is that the key part?
Yeah.
When you do too something, then you are in causing again.
Becomes the object of your doing rather than that's what you are.
Right, yeah, okay. That everything you do. Okay.
41?
41.
Hmm?
If you want to live as you truly desire, look carefully at what you are doing and living that you do not desire, and don't continue yourself in these ways, those ways. Mm-hmm. Stop doing it.
Do something other.
42. Unlike God, the universe never says no, and never withholds from you. Okay.
Okay. So at that point, I'm going to withhold from you any further reading. And we will pick it up there next week after we discuss our beginning stories. Okay?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Great. Writing myself a reminder.
Yep.
Super. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for everybody's input. It was very more enriching than just reading it on my own.
What?
Nothing.
I didn't understand what you said.
Oh, okay. I thought I was in trouble. I said, thanks for your input. It was more enriching than living it on my own.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, reading it on my own, sorry.
That too.
Obviously, I'm getting tired. That too, yeah. That too, for real.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, be back next week with your stories. And until then, good night for now.
Bye for now.